As you know, so much is changing in Russia and the world. Growing urbanization, growing education, a growing civil society, and of course, growing numbers of Russians talking about new political relationships, civil rights, democratic participation, rule of law. Yet the autocracy was retreating, increasingly though, begun clearly with Nicholas's father, retreating into a stubborn, and many Russians at the time would say blind, faith in Russia's most ancient political tradition. The idea of the Tsar as absolute and mighty and all-powerful, divinely appointed and inspired and bound to his people, as Nicholas certainly believed, in a sort of mystical understanding and love, not bound to his nation or his people through democratic, law-based institutions. There's one other aspect of Nicholas's intellectual personality that deserves mention, for it was no less critical to understanding how he behaved and indeed why he fell from power in 1917. And I have in mind here Nicholas's deep fatalism, often noticed by people who knew him. Ultimately, Nicholas was certain that everything that happened in life was God's will. Whatever trials he or Russia as a whole had to experience were to be accepted with humility and grace. As he liked to say, God knows what's good for us. We must bow down our heads and repeat the sacred words, thy will be done. And this, in fact, was a leitmotif throughout his life. When Nicholas took the throne, which he did not desire, it's clear, but accepted as part of duty and fate, in the face of a disaster that occurred during celebrations of his coronation in Moscow in 1896, when 1,000 people were trampled to death trying to push up to the souvenir stands where beer and souvenir cups were available, his response to this disaster that opened his reign, 1,000 people probably killed, his answer was simple. It's God's will. In fact, most notoriously, he was invited to go to a dance at the embassy of the French, at the French ambassador's residence. His advisor said, you shouldn't do this. It's an embarrassing thing to do after this terrible disaster on your coronation day. He said, it's God's will. During the revolutionary upheavals of 1905, which I'll talk about next time, when he agreed to allow democratic elections for a legislature, to allow a measure of civil rights, again, he said, it's God's will. Though to be sure, he tries to undo some of these changes, having become convinced that he misunderstood God's will on that occasion. And most importantly, in 1917, when he was forced from the throne, held prisoner of the new democratic government and then of the Bolsheviks, when Romanov rule had finally ended, again his answer was the same. It's God's will. Now for some people who have looked at Nicholas's life and behavior and his personality, this sort of stoic fatalism is what earned him sainthood. And as you may know, the Orthodox Church has recently canonized Nicholas and his family and many others who died at the hands of communists. And in particular, they sanctified Nicholas II as a special type of saint that was called a passion sufferer, precisely for his acceptance of God's fate, no matter how horrible. For other observers, though, of Nicholas II, this fatalism was one of the many tragic flaws that led to his fall and even to his death, along with this archaic, this faith and this archaic, and many would say no longer viable, political ideal. If he was less fatalistic, and of course capable of understanding more political alternatives, it said he might have been willing to carry through on the type of reforms that at least one point in his reign in 1905 he began. For fairness, though, we should keep in mind the illusions and, one might say, the blinding faith that existed on the other side. The Bolsheviks and their supporters who made the revolution of 1917, at least its latter part, who executed the Romanovs in the summer of 1918, they too had their own utopian ideas. They too, as you'll see, had their own faith in the people and the special relationship between, in this case, not Tsar, but party and people. They too had a faith that history was certainly on their side. But that's another story, which we'll return to soon. First, though, it's necessary to follow Nicholas and his government as they faced an earlier challenge, really the greatest political challenge yet faced by the autocracy, the revolution of 1905.